Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 18, In the Meantime. My life seemed to lead me at an accelerated pace after being subjected to Reagan and Bush. My handler, Alex Houston, egotistically claimed it was his and Elmer's, his alter ego dummy, popularity that kept us traveling so extensively within the country music circuit. When we weren't traveling the Caribbean and Mexico via NCL ships, or driving his cocaine-loaded motorhome to strategically booked shows across the US. We were routinely moving in and out of Washington, D.C. All along the way, my daughter and I were either prostituted, used in commercial pornography, or filmed in Michael Dante's chief bestiality pornography as ordered by Uncle Ronnie Reagan. Occasionally our travels would take us to Michigan, where Houston made certain we stayed with my family. Trips to my father's house were devastating but informative. My mother had developed deep, psychological scars above and beyond her own MPD condition and became an insomniac. My father by this time was routinely traveling to London, Germany, and Mexico, and taking the family to Florida's Disney World and Washington, D.C. My older brother, Hill, still worked for and with my father, traveled with him annually to hunt in Cheney's Gray Bar, Wyoming Lodge, and maintained his wife and three children under trauma-based mind control according to my father's instructions. My brother, Mike, ran a video store to front some of my father's and Uncle Bob Danny's lucrative porn video business. My sister, Kelly Jo, became a belly dancing contortionist excelling in gymnastics since she became as flexible as Gumby, according to her prostitution programming. She worked her way through school in children's daycare centers, admittedly spotting, for my father, abused children for potential, chosen ones, candidates. In 1990 she graduated to open a licensed daycare, Little Learners, in Grand Haven, Michigan for my father. My brother, Tom, Beaver, is a Kempo Kids, CIA project, programmed computer genius. My brother Tim broke his leg, in the same place my mother had broken his leg years before, due to following my father's sports programming above and beyond human capability. And my youngest sister, Kimmy, became hysterically obsessed with Mr. Rogers, expressed immense fear of her huge electric dollhouse that lit up at night to look like the White House, and was under a doctor's care for anorexia by age 7. I look forward to the day I can help them all, and justice is served on my father. Since I was using parts of my brain I would not have used under normal circumstances, I developed the ability to read backwards as naturally as I could read forwards. Houston tapped into this typically occult-based phenomenon as a means of scrambling road signs to promote amnesia of where we were traveling. He further compounded his effort by conditioning me to read phonetically and literally, and alternated his scrambling methods. Zoo became ooze and doos translated to ounce. Arkansas read our Kansas, and Missouri became and was misery. East became west, and Highway 66 became 99. When I traveled, I literally did not consciously know if I were coming or going. If an outsider happened to ask me about where I'd traveled, I mechanically replied, "The towns all run together and look alike after a while." Commands delivered in the same language-twisting manner were natural for me to follow, roll with it, was easier for me to become according to Reagan's acting definition than it was to go with the flow by rolling with it. Phrases like Wyoming Senator Alan Simpson's, in a switch of an eye, personality slash eye hypnotic blink eye the letter, complaint becomes compliant. The parts of my brain I was forced to function with were not conducive to normal thinking. Nor could I have appeared normal to outsiders had they cared to see beyond my superficial programmed cover personality. I did have occasion to mix with outsiders at the local library where I took Kelly for her books on days when we were not traveling. By age 6, she tested at the 7th grade reading level. I also emerged from my closed environment to tend to Kelly's schooling. She maintained straight A's, but her poor attendance record threatened to violate state requirements. Once when the librarian asked where Kelly would be traveling to waive library book due dates, or the teacher inquired as to Kelly's absences, I gave the usual response of, "The towns all run together and look alike after a while." If they pressed for specifics, I ran through a series of religious phrases such as, "Praise the Lord," to compensate for my lack of answers. People tended to overlook and accept religious fanaticism, personality peculiarities, which combined with my role traveling the country music industry, kept outsiders at a distance for years. My religious fanatic cover personality was cultivated at the Brentwood, Tennessee Lord's Chapel non-denominational Pentecostal church through the CIA operative preacher, Reverend Billy Roy Moore, who has since fled to Arkansas due to a local murder scandal. Moore transported cocaine from the Caribbean for the CIA, at least during the Reagan administration, under the guise of so-called missions, one that is Christian ministries. It most likely was not the intent of the Christians dedicated to their Caribbean ministries to be used by the CIA and Moore to inadvertently mule drugs into our country. Even CIA agents operating under need to know partial information were denied the full scope of what they were actually participating in. Many seemingly willing participants were manipulated, provided justification, and deliberately misled to believe they were serving their country, rather than destroying it from the inside out. Pastor Moore combined his knowledge of Kelly's and my programming keys, codes, and triggers with his use of metaphorical language to maintain and/or direct our mode of operation. Moore's following consisted primarily of government mind-controlled slaves and handlers, including the Mandrills, Jack Green and his slave, the Oak Ridge Boys, and others. He instructed us on how to vote, which political issues low support, and to follow other religious political leaders such as his and Manuel Noriega's friend, evangelist Jimmy Swaggart. Religious counseling, from Moore equals to maintaining mind control programming through God's orders, and God's orders often came by telephone. Houston constantly prostituted Kelly to anyone in the loop who was willing to pay. When she wasn't being prostituted, she was being filmed pornographically. By 1984, Michael Dante routinely filmed Kelly in pornography, since kiddie porn was as lucrative as bestiality. He filmed Kelly and me in Las Vegas, Nevada and various other locations throughout the Caribbean, California, Florida, Tennessee, and in my home state of Michigan. This created professional conflict with longtime kiddie pornographers formerly associated with Houston. Houston's close friend in Waycross, Georgia, pedophile Jimmy Walker, managed the Okefenokee Swamp Park and had participated in black budget funding operations for years on both the cocaine and pornography levels. His counterpart, Dick Flood, refused to participate to any more pornography after Dante came on the scene. Even the Huntsville, Alabama NASA/DARPA/CIA appointed law enforcement officers could rarely succeed in their bidding for Kelly's videotaped performances unless directly ordered by Senator Byrd. Dante considered himself her future owner as well as mine, and maintained control of our porn business ventures through serious U.S. government and international mafia methodisms/connections. Jimmy Walker, the same photographer who had taken pornographic wedding night pictures for Larry Flint, recently had other photographs of me published in Hustler. When Dante found out, he was furious. Larry Flint and Dante both worked for the CIA, had Vatican and mafia connections, and deliberately appealed to Reagan's perversions using Project Monarch mind-controlled slaves. What Flint could not legally publish, Dante ran through the underground. Flint and Dante lived on opposite coasts, which, despite their similarities, still was not far enough apart to soothe their differences. Waving his hands in dramatic Italian gestures, Dante furiously spouted a string of obscenities over Flint's publishing photos of what he deemed his property, accusing Flint of going to extremes to gain favor/protection from the government. Dante shouted, "He's a bigger whore than the girls he promotes." Michael Dante's pornographic filming abilities served several purposes. Aside from producing porn according to Reagan's own, well-known, perversions and instructions, Dante was present during many key international government gatherings. Oftentimes when I and others were prostituted to various government, New World Order, leaders, Dante had hidden cameras filming perverse sexual acts apparently for future blackmail leverage. These videos were scandalous in proportion and were usually ordered by Reagan. Dante turned the videos over to Reagan, and covertly kept copies to protect himself. Dante converted a small room of his Beverly Hills mansion into a security vault, where he kept his personal copies of the international blackmail porn tapes there. Among these internationally scandalous tapes are numerous videos covertly produced at the supposedly secure political sex playground in Northern California, Bohemian Grove. According to Houston, Dante's high-tech undetectable cameras used fiber optics, and fisheye lens were in each of the elite club's numerous sexual perversion theme rooms. My knowledge of these cameras was due to the strategically compromising positions of the political perpetrators I was prostituted to in the various kinky theme rooms. I was programmed and equipped to function in all rooms at Bohemian Grove in order to compromise specific government targets according to their personal perversions. Anything, anytime, anywhere with anyone, was my mode of operation at the Grove. I do not purport to understand the full function of this political cesspool playground, as my perception was limited to my own realm of experience. My perception is that Bohemian Grove serves those ushering in the New World Order through mind control, and consists primarily of the highest mafia and U.S. government officials. I do not use the term highest loosely, as copious quantities of drugs were consumed there. Project Monarch mind control slaves were routinely abused there to fulfill the primary purpose of the club, purveying perversion. Bohemian Grove is reportedly intended to be used recreationally, providing a supposedly secure environment for politically affluent individuals to party without restraint. The only business conducted there pertained to implementing the New World Order, through the proliferation of mind control atrocities, giving the place an air of Masonic secrecy. The only room where business discussions were permitted was the small, dark lounge affectionately and appropriately referred to as the Underground. 2. Sex slaves were not routinely permitted in the Underground for security reasons, leaving the lounge's small stage as the only source of entertainment. This entertainment ranged from would-be talents such as Lee Atwater, Bill Clinton, and George Bush to CIA operative entertainers such as Boxcar Willie and Lee Greenwood. On one occasion I was instructed to meet with former President Gerald Ford in the Underground, where Lee Atwater was picking and singing. As I waited through the smoke-filled room to Ford's table, Atwater interrupted his song to cryptically acknowledge my unwelcome presence by singing choruses of Over the Rainbow and Bird's Song for Me, Country Roads, while emphasizing the lines of Almost Heaven, West Virginia. My purpose at the Grove was sexual in nature, and therefore my perceptions were limited to a sex slave's viewpoint. As an effective means of control to ensure undetected proliferation of their perverse indulgences, slaves such as myself were subjected to ritualistic trauma. I knew each breath I took could be my last, as the threat of death lurked in every shadow. Slaves of advancing age or with failing programming were sacrificially murdered, at random, in the wooded grounds of Bohemian Grove, and I felt it was simply a matter of time until it would be me. Rituals were held at a giant, concrete owl monument on the banks of, ironically enough, the Russian River. These occultish sex rituals stemmed from the scientific belief that mind-controlled slaves required severe trauma to ensure compartmentalization of the memory, and not from any spiritual motivation. My own threat of death was instilled when I witnessed the sacrificial death of a young, dark-haired victim, at which time I was instructed to perform sexually, as though my life depended upon it. I was told, "The next sacrifice victim could be you." Anytime when you least expect it, the owl will consume you. Prepare yourself, and stay prepared. Being prepared equated to being totally suggestible, that is, on my toes, awaiting their command. After returning to Tennessee, Houston attempted to distort my Bohemian Grove experience by instructing me to prepare myself for imminent death. He ordered me into a bathtub of cold water, placed ice cubes in my vagina, then transferred me to his bed. There he tied a coroner's type tag on my toe, and hypnotically deepened my trance to the point where my heart and breathing were nearly stopped. Then he gratified himself on my cold, still body through phone necrophilia, reportedly one of his favorite perversions. Houston had perfected his perversion to the extent that he handed the keys to my death state programming to Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino for use in Reagan's hands-on mind control demonstrations. My death state also further equipped me in my role of anything, anytime, anywhere with anyone, to be accessed at Bohemian Grove. The club offered a necrophilia theme room to its members. I was so heavily drugged and programmed when used in the necrophilia room, that the threat of actually slipping through death's door, and being sacrificed, before I knew it, did not affect me. My whole existence was balanced precariously on the edge of death as a matter of routine anyway. My robotic state did not permit me the luxury of self-preservation, and I could only do exactly what I was told to do. My necrophilia room experience was only for the purpose of providing Dante a compromising film of a targeted member anyway. Other perversion theme rooms at the Bohemian Club included what I heard Ford refer to as the dark room. When he not so cleverly said, "Let's go to the dark room and see what develops," I understood from experience that he was interested in indulging in his perverse obsession for pornography. In the dark room, members had sex with the same mind-controlled slave they were viewing in porn on a big-screen television. There was a triangular glass display centered in a main throughway where I was locked in with various trained animals, including snakes. Members walking by watched illicit sex acts of bestiality, women with women, mothers with daughters, kids with kids, or any other unlimited perverse visual display. I was once brutally assaulted by Dick Cheney in the leather room, which was designed like a dark, black leather-lined train berth. As I crawled through the leather flaps covering the narrow entrance, I heard Cheney play on the word, berth/berth, as the soft blackness engulfed me. With the small opening covered, the blinding darkness enhanced the sense of touch and provided an option of anonymity. Cheney jokingly claimed that I blew his cover when I recognized his all too familiar voice and abnormally large penis size. There was a room of shackles and tortures, black lights and strobes, an opium den, ritualistic sex altars, a chapel, group orgy rooms including poster beds, water beds, and kitten houses. I was used as a rag doll in the toy store, and as a urinal in the Golden Arches room. From the owl's roost to the necrophilia room, no memory of sexual abuse is as horrifying as the conversations overheard in the underground pertaining to implementing the New World Order. I learned that perpetrators believed that controlling the masses through propaganda mind manipulation did not guarantee there would be a world left to dominate due to environmental and overpopulation problems. The solution being debated was not pollution/population control, but mass genocide of selected undesirables. 1. More often operated under the cloak of world vision. 2. The wooden sign was carved to read, U.N.Derground,